Colonel Temple Reel 3.
Yes, the Chinese clearly of peasant stock, and as I said perhaps earlier, they were not unfriendly towards us. We were there with this particular group of people for some 24 hours before being marched north.
What was the march like?
No problem at all. None at all. We just walked. I mean, all the marching was during the night. All our movement as prisoners was always at night because, of course, the American Air Force dominated the skies and so they couldn't afford to move during the daytime.
Did the question of escape occur to you?
Oh, yes, it did. Just to start with, we came to the conclusion that we just had to build up our sleep a little bit and our food a little bit, and then we would escape. Officially, of course, this is wrong. One should escape almost at once. But as I have described to you, we were surrounded by about 2,000 Chinese at that particular point, unarmed, lacking sleep, lacking food, and, in short, in a word, exhausted.
So what happened to you next?
Yes. We went north and finally met up with a number of other Gloucesters who had been captured. And in fact, on the third day, we were told we were moving north again, so we all were then in a large column of prisoners moving north. And at this point, we decided that we should escape just as soon as the suitable opportunity presented itself. Well, it did the following day, because they had put us into a Korean schoolhouse. These Korean schoolhouses are actually perhaps the biggest buildings in Korea. So when you think of a column going into a schoolhouse, it might seem odd, but in fact it must have taken some 200, 300 men without any problem. Anyway, while we were in this schoolhouse during the day, we found that in one of the rooms, they were all empty apart from this particular room we were in, had a trapdoor leading down into not a cellar, but just below the floor. Also in the room were a lot of sacks of rice husks, I suppose about a dozen, something like that, sacks of rice husks. So there were three of us, and we decided that what we would do is that when the time came for us to move on, or rather just before the time came for us to move on, i.e. when it was dark, that we would get under this trap door and the other people would put the sacks on top of the trap door, and we would hope that the Chinese didn't notice. And they didn't, because I'd taken the precautions of having one of the other American prisoner who looked something like me to stand sort of in my line and to take my place, also to be in his own place when the roll was called. So all was well for a bit, and the column moved off, and we were under this little trapdoor. I may say there was only about 2 foot, something like that, between this wooden floor and the hard earth. My problem there, which was not shared by the other two people, was that I do suffer from claustrophobia, no doubt about it. Anyway, I was the one who was closest to the trapdoor, whereas the other two people had gone on underneath the floorboards and were perfectly happy, apparently. One was Henry Cabral, who was a lieutenant in the Gloucesters, and the other was an American by the name of Eddie Leach, a lieutenant. Well, after about 2 hours, apparently the Chinese, having walked away, they did their counting again, and of course this time eventually found that they were three light. And they came back to the schoolhouse with one of the British officers, Anthony Wilson, and they told him in rather strange English that he must shout for us. And so he did. Actually, it can't have been as much as 2 hours. No, it was less than that. Less than 2 hours. Anyway, some distance. He came back and we heard him shouting. And he shouted for us, knowing perfectly well where we were, of course, and said, no, obviously they're not here. I can't think where they have gone. And eventually they moved on again for the second time. And at this point we pushed the trap door open, moved the quite light sacks, and moved out of the building, having first made quite sure that there was nobody lurking about. We then walked all that night, crossing a river. Well, yes, a river. I don't know which river it was or anything. And then towards dawn, just before dawn, we caught sight of a high range of hills, and we said, right, think we can make that just before dawn breaks. So we, and it looked as though it had good cover on top. Anyway, we got there and then found that actually there was no cover on the top at all, other than about sort of 6 or 9 inches. But we said, never mind, this will do, because it's so remote from anywhere that nobody will ever come up here. But somebody did come up there sometime during the morning. I suppose it was about sort of 8 o'clock. An old granny and her grandson came up gathering brushwood for the fire. And would you believe it, they walked absolutely where we were hiding. But this was the nature of the hills, because they were so narrow on the ridges, it was bound to be a bit like that. Now, I suppose we actually should have killed both of them and then moved on. But the fact was, not moved on, stayed where we were. But the fact was, somehow, there was a revulsion to doing that, and we didn't do it, and we decided to just move on, because in the far distance, I suppose, something like 15 miles away, we could see what clearly was a very high range of hills with trees. Somehow we could see that there were trees on it and not just brushwood. So we said, right, we will make for that as fast as we can. So we did. This was the three of us going. On the way, we passed a few villagers, and they said, where are we going? And fortunately, I did learn Russian while I was at Sandhurst, and the North Koreans did have some Russian advisers. By this time, of course, we didn't have, well, we never wore badges of rank anyway, and we could have looked like Russian. So I spoke to them in Russian and said we were going on to the front, and they seemed happy with that solution, and we walked on and on, going quite quickly. and accidentally, of course, came across another village, tried the same trick. It seemed to work, i.e. that we were Russian going on to the front, but I suppose we'd gone some, I would have thought we'd gone some 8 miles. We'd covered a lot of ground, maybe more, and we were coming to this ridge of, yes, I'd say they were mountains, was only another mile away, but we were heading into a re-entrant. And suddenly, quite to our surprise, there was a burst of fire all around us, and some North Koreans had discovered our whereabouts, and once again, we were captured. Initially, they were really a bit upset about this, because one of the villages we'd passed through had been bombed by American Air Force and was just a heap of ash. And I think they held us responsible. We made it quite clear, of course, that actually we were English and no responsibility of ours. We had by then learnt what the Korean for English and American was. The Korean for English is Yongguk, and the Korean for American is Meguk. And we said that. And to our immense surprise, after a little bit of hostility, they then, these Korean soldiers, took us to a restaurant of sorts in the next village. And there we had a really most marvellous meal. And we thought, oh, that's good, nothing wrong there. And that was fine. However, eventually we were in this place for a number of hours. I couldn't say, we were there during the night. And the following day, we were taken to, the Chinese came and took us from the Korean soldiers who had taken us to this restaurant. We then marched with them the whole of the following day, eventually ending up in this Korean civilian jail. This jail was just a iron grill door set into the rock. And there we were, pushed inside there. When our eyes got used to the gloom, we could see that there were a lot of Korean civilians in there. We later found, I don't quite know how we found out, but signs and that sort of thing, that these were North Korean Christians, and they had been in there for some length of time, it seemed to us, because their hair was down to their shoulders, and in those days you didn't see too many people with their hair down to their shoulders, not like now, and their beards also were long. Anyhow, these people, these Korean Christians, were very welcoming to us, and in so far as they could be welcoming. Snag was that they were covered in lice. And it didn't take us long to realize that the clever trick was to try and isolate ourselves from the lice. This we did. The floor of this cave, it was a big, big cave, and the floor was covered in little puddles of water, and the trick was to find an island where the lice couldn't swim to, and that we did. Stayed in that place for a number of days, and there was no way of making an escape from there. No chance at all. Eventually, the word came that we were just us, were going to be taken north again. So again, we worked all during the night and came to a place which subsequently became known as the Bean Camp. I don't really know why it was called the Bean Camp, because one bit of food you never saw was a bean in that place. This bean camp had apparently been a prisoner of war camp during the Second World War. But there were only a number of huts left of a sort of, what should we call it? Yes, they were just wooden huts, which was something. And there we were inside those for a bit. The food at this point, of course, was the usual golyong, which is like pearl barley, only sort of slightly mauve pink colour. That was fine. We stayed there for a bit, and so far no problems. And then we went over what became known as the Glass Mountain. Why it was christened the Glass Mountain, I know not, but everybody, it was known as the Glass Mountain. And we went over the Glass Mountain and down into another camp, which was known as the Mining Camp, so-called, obviously, because the village was a mining village. And the place we were at was in a schoolhouse with one or two outside buildings. I have, in fact, I realise, left out one little thing. We were taken, before we came to the bean camp, to another house. And it was suggested to us at this point that if we made some radio talk, we could be released or something like this. We declined to do that, obviously, and again went on to the bean camp. And then from the bean camp, over the Glass Mountain and into the mining camp. Here we found people. There were Americans, a number of nationalities there, in addition to some Gloucesters, not all. But it was here that, I suppose, for the first time, we noticed that morale was dropping noticeably. And there were cases, obvious cases, dysentery, beriberi, jaundice, surrounded us. Once again, we decided that we ought to escape. This was Henry Cabral mainly and myself. And we said, okay, right, we've learnt our lesson that to go due south is not clever, because the range of hills in Korea basically runs east-west, so you go up, down, up, down, up, down, and in the meantime, in the valleys, you're exposing yourself to Korean civilians or military, and on the top, you can be seen as a European, because you move quite differently to a local moves. So what we decided to do was, in fact, to head due west for the coast, and our plan was to find a boat and set sail and go round and make our way round by sea. Well, escape was no problem at all. They didn't have many guards on this schoolhouse, I suppose about five or something. There was no wire, and it was just a question of walking out, which we did one night. By this time, we had decided that we had to have six of us, so as to be able to push off any boat that we found. Three would have been too few. So So there were now six of us in this group. Well, we pushed off that night, and we hadn't, and for some reason, the other three were Americans, and this was a mistake, a great mistake, because they really hadn't got the moral fiber that was required. The first one, incident that went wrong, was round about 3 o'clock in the morning while we were moving, and quite difficult going. One of the Americans, a chap called Sergeant Wilkins, who was an observer of B-56, I think it was, aircraft, he suddenly developed dysentery, and amazingly enough, this reduced him to nothing in very short order. At that point, of course, it started to rain. None of us had any clothing. I was still wearing what I had when I was captured, somewhat naturally, which was now just a shirt, pair of trousers, and a pair of boots and no socks. This man, Sergeant Wilkins, sort of went down in front of our eyes, and we said, oh my gosh, I suppose we've got to do something about him, we'd better get him to shelter. So we found a lone Korean house and observed it for a bit and then went in. We found two Korean women inside and told them to behave themselves and got ourselves warm by the fire. Now, it seems to me that there was a child or something else with these women, because somebody clearly told the Koreans that we were in that house. And while we were getting warm, having got absolutely soaked in the rain, you know, people were shivering, and this chap who had dysentery seemed to be in a bad way. Following morning, round about 9 o'clock, something like that, shots rang out, and you could see the bullet holes going sort of through the walls and out the other side, which was quite impressive. We realized once again we were surrounded. So there it was, captured for the this time, the third time. Eventually, we had made quite a distance, but nothing like enough. Anyhow, we went back to the bean camp. Somehow, I can't remember quite how it was that we got there, but we went back to this place, and because we'd escaped, we were put in the what was known as the stockade. Well, that was three of us. And inside there were these American soldiers. They were just three American Negroes, very good soldiers altogether, good hard people, which was I found them completely different to the white Americans, whereas the white Americans had been blaming Truman and all the rest of it for getting him into the war, the black Americans were solely, quite clearly, patriots, proud of their country, and wouldn't have anything said against it. That was fine. Well, we were put on to permanent burial fatigue, which amounted to putting away a number of people. Before, again, we were taken again on our travels again after a short while to over this place called the Glass Mountain and back into the mining camp.
You were burying POWs, were you?
Hmm?
You were burying other POWs.
Yes, yes. Americans at this point dying quite rapidly. We went over this the Glass Mountain, which I suppose was a distance of at least 12 miles up and down and into the mining camp, at least 12 miles, probably 15. Then, of course, the mining camp knew who we were and knew that we'd escaped, and so they decided that we were either dangerous or should be punished. So we were taken from the mining camp up to what appeared to be a private house. You know, that was a mud house with paper windows. And there we were tied up with signal cable with our hands behind our backs. And there we were left until somewhere around about 9 o'clock the following morning. We tried to get out of our bonds. In fact, I did succeed in getting out, but then the guards came in again and tied us up yet again, and this time it was really tight. Net result was that eventually the hands went numb, and, well, not only the hands, the whole arms went numb. And a few days later, something approaching gangrene set in. This was, fortunately, the smell was unbelievable, and it must have been bad because we noticed that Koreans passing this house sort of walked on the other side of the road as they passed this little house because the smell was so bad. Anyway, the flies were attracted by this gangrene and laid their maggots, and the maggots ate out the gangrene. The whole of my left arm was covered from here to the armpit in maggots.
From your hand to your armpit?
Yeah. You can just see the remaining scar there, and one something there, I think you can see.
Yeah, it's like a scar on the underarm.
Yeah. You can see the vestige. It took 40 years for the scar tissue to go, but as you see, it's gone now, and again on the other side. However, we must thank these maggots for getting rid of the gangrene, and finally. But what was interesting was looking down at one's wrist and seeing the tendons exposed. You could see everything exposed, and on this side, it was down, on the left-hand side, it was down to the bone. You could see that, which was a bit bothering. Well, finally, after some 10 days, time, you know, doesn't mean too much after a bit, and I never could remember how many days had gone by. Finally, we were taken back to the main part of the bean camp again, or near the main part. But we weren't, we were still in a separate place. And I think at this time, I certainly got both dysentery